A Patriot, John Galsworthy. The other day I was told a true story, which I remember vaguely hearing or reading about during the war, but which is worth retelling for those who missed it, for it has certain valuable ironic implications and a sort of grandeur. It concerns one of those beings who, when they spy upon us, are known by that word of three letters, as offensive as any in the language, and when they spy for us, are dignified by the expression Secret Service, and looked on as heroes of at least second water. You will recollect that when the war broke out, the 1,500 persons engaged in supplying Germany with information, mainly trivial and mostly erroneous, concerning our conditions and arrangements, were all known by the authorities and were put out of action at a single swoop. From that moment, there was not one discovered case of espionage by spies already resident in England when war was declared. There were, however, a few, and, I am told, unimportant discovered cases of espionage by persons who developed the practice or went into England for the purpose during the war. This story concerns one of the latter. In August 1914, there was living in America a businessman of German birth and American citizenship, called, let us say, for it was not his name, Lichtfelder, who had once been an officer in the German army, a man of about 50, of square and still military appearance, with rather short, stiff hair, a straight back to his head, and a patriotic conscience too strong for his American citizenship. It was not long then before an American called Lightfield landed in Genoa and emerged as Lichtfelder at the German headquarters of his old regiment, offering his services. "No," they said to him, "you are no longer a young and active man, and you are an American citizen. We are very disappointed with our secret service in England. Something seems to have gone wrong. You can be of much greater service to the fatherland if, having learned our codes, you will go to England as an American citizen and send us all the information you can acquire." Lichtfelder's soul was with his old regiment, but being a patriot, he consented. During the next 2 months, he made himself acquainted with all the tricks of his new trade, took ship again at Genoa, and reappeared as Lightfield in the United States. Soon after this, he sailed for Liverpool, well stocked with business addresses and samples, and supplied with his legitimate American passport in his own American name. He spent the first day of his secret service wandering about the docks of a town which, in his view, if not in that of other people, was a naval station of importance. He also noted carefully the half-militarized appearance of the khaki figures in the streets, and in the evening he penned a business letter to a gentleman in Rotterdam, between the lines of which, devoted to the more enlightened forms of, shall we say, plumbing, he wrote down in invisible ink all he had seen. Such and such ships arrived or about to sail, such and such khaki drilling or wandering about the streets, all of which had importance in his view, if not in fact. He ended with the words, "Morgan's Dublin Lichtfelder," and posted the letter. Now, unfortunately for this poor but simple patriot, there was a young lady in the General Post Office who was spending her days in opening all letters with suspected foreign addresses and submitting them to the test for invisible ink. To her joy, for she was weary at the dearth of that useful commodity, between the lines of this commercial screed, which purported to be concerned with the refinements of plumbing, out sprang the guilty ink. To a certain department were telephoned the incautious Morgan's Dublin Lichtfelder. Now, no alien in those days was suffered to leave for Ireland save through a bottleneck at Holyhead. To the bottleneck then went the message, "Did man called Lichtfelder travel yesterday to Dublin?" The answer came quickly, "American called Lightfield went Dublin yesterday, returned last night, is now on train for Euston." At Euston, our patriot, after precisely 3 days of secret service, was arrested and lodged wherever they were then lodged. "I am," he said, "an American citizen called Lightfield." "That," said the British cabinet, not without disagreement, "makes a difference. You shall be tried by ordinary process of law and defended by counsel chosen by the American embassy at our expense instead of by court-martial." Speedily, for those days the law's delays were short, the American citizen called Lightfield, alias Lichtfelder, was put on his trial for supplying information to the enemy. And for 3 days, at the government's expense, a certain eminent counsel gave the utmost of his wits to preparing his defence. But a certain great advocate, whose business it was to prosecute, had given the utmost of his wits to considering with what question he should open his cross-examination, since it is well known how important is the first question. And there had come to him an inspiration. "Mr. Lichtfelder," he said, fixedly regarding the upright figure in the dock, "tell me, have you not been an officer in the German army?" The hands of the American citizen went to his sides, and his figure stiffened. For hours he had been telling the court how entirely concerned he was with business, giving his references, showing his samples, explaining that, as for the lines in invisible ink in this letter, which he admitted sending, well, it was simply that he had met a Dutch journalist on board the ship coming out, who had said to him, "You know, we can get no news at all, we neutrals. Do send us something. Not, of course, harmful to England, but something we can say." And he had sent it. Was it harmful? It was nothing but trifles he had sent. And now, at that first question, he was standing suddenly a little more erect and silent. And the great advocate said, "I won't press you now, Mr. Lichtfelder, but we will go on to other matters. But I should like you to think that question over, because it is not only the first question that I ask you, it will also be the last." And the court adjourned, the cross-examination not yet over, with that question not yet asked again. In the early morning of the following day, when the warder went to the cell of Lichtfelder, there, by his muffler, dangled his body from the grating. Beneath the dead feet, the cell Bible had been kicked away. But since, with the stretching of the muffler, those feet had still been able to rest on the ground, the patriot had drawn them up until he was choked to death. He had waited till dawn, for on the cell slate was written this: "I am a soldier of his rank I do not desire to mention. I have had a fair trial of the United Kingdom. I am not dying as a spy, but as a soldier. My fate I stood as a man, but I can't be a liar and perjure myself. What I have done for my country. I shall express my thanks, and may the Lord bless you all." And from the 10 lawyers, 8 English and 2 American, who, with me, heard the story told, there came, as it were, one murmur: "Jolly fine." And so it was.